It's time now for our ongoing series discussing substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium.
My name is Dr. Andrea Ciberini. I'm an addiction medicine provider. I practice primarily in Vancouver, but I also work with our program in Aberdeen.
I'm Sherwin Phillips, and I'm with Lifeline Connections, and I'm a care navigator.
And I'm Elizabeth Lorenzo, and I am with Lifeline Connections in the Aberdeen office. I am the administrative supervisor and also a substance use professional counselor.
Some of the misconceptions of addiction is that, really.
Yes.
But I know I remember reading an article years ago about Wall Street people,
yes,
who are addicted to heroin. They function above and beyond what we do every day, but they need that heroin every day to make them function that way. That's the type of people that it's misconceived. It's not the people that live in the blue tarps and everything.
So is that a mental health issue? That's where we need to get society all on board and say, yes, our brain is an organ. Mental health is part of health care.
Addiction doesn't have a face. It could be anyone's face.
Absolutely.
So, you know, it transforms. But a place that, for outreach, for saying, is a good place that, you know, we can send people is Coastal Community Action. They have a lot of resources over there. So I just want to say that.
Okay.
I would add also to the point about, you know, anyone can have a substance use disorder, and that is definitely what we see, and some of the trends include, you know, we have seen in national data over the last, you know, 10 years that certain adolescents, like with adolescents, for example, that certain substance use has declined. But there are certain things that we see more commonly that people use that are, it doesn't have as much of the sort of quote life destroying effect. So, for example, marijuana addiction, which is a real thing, and also stimulant use, and when I say stimulant use, not really talking about meth, but specifically abuse of prescription stimulants that are used to treat conditions like ADHD, so things like Adderall. And so we definitely see a lot of that in sort of in the shadow. So it's not something that really any people think about, but a lot of people use that to function, you know, if they, to stay awake, you know, we have, obviously our society puts a lot of pressure on people to work long hours and things like that. So when you mentioned Wall Street, I thought you were actually going to mention stimulants, because that's a huge issue in our country, is the abuse of prescription stimulants. And not to say that they shouldn't be used, because they're an excellent medication to treat ADHD and other conditions, but when they're abused, obviously can cause problems. And then, much like people transitioning from things like oxycodone to heroin, a lot of times people will find that they end up starting to use methamphetamine, which has its own dangers. A lot of elderly people are prescribed opioids, you know, things like oxycodone or Vicodin, for pain, and there is a lot of addiction in that age group that really isn't addressed commonly, because it doesn't even occur to a lot of, you know, practitioners, primary care, because again, we all have our biases, and so even healthcare providers don't necessarily, you know, they look at grandma coming in for her, you know, wellness check and her blood pressure medicine, and it would never occur to them that she might have an opioid use disorder.
And family members may not either, huh? Or would they be aware of that?
Often not. But a lot of people, you know, when you said the Wall Street thing, it made me think of something. A lot of people use substances in a way that it just maintains them. So they'll use just enough to not get sick, or just enough, you know, for the whatever it is, the need that they're meeting. And they're able to do that and not keep going up and up and up and up and up. So that is something that we see with the opioid pills. And also I've had patients who use heroin who they say, you know, I use this amount every day. They're not building up a tolerance. They're not going up on it. And that's how much they use. And then they go throughout their day and they function and they go home to their wife and kids and they go to their job and they pay their bills. So there's not one scenario, and I'm glad you brought that up, that, you know, you can't say, oh, this is the path that people take with their addiction, because it really is, everyone has an individual story. And my goal is to keep, and I tell patients this all the time, my goal is to keep you alive until you're ready to be completely sober, because we know that this is a chronic relapsing disease. I compare it to cancer. You never know when it's going to recur. It can pop up any time, so you have to be vigilant. And it can kill you. And as long as you're alive, there's hope. And so that's why a lot of the outreach focus and things like that, I did want to put a plug in for that, because there are a lot of community organizations working on reducing overdose deaths through various things like naloxone distribution, which is commonly called Narcan. The distribution of that medication and training of people has improved significantly over the last 5+ years. Pharmacies can now distribute it without a prescription. It's covered by insurance. And there's actually the Department of Health in Washington has a program, a naloxone distribution program, where they distribute to various agencies, you know, boxes and boxes of it, so that we can distribute it to patients and hand it over. And we all know, I mean, we know that it's a life-saving medication, and it can be the difference between, you know, someone having that second chance or not. So that is something that it's really important for people to be aware. I wish every household in America had Narcan in it, because yes. You never know when somebody is going to have an overdose. Absolutely. Because of the fact that you might not know that your family member is using opioids.
It could. Let's just say, for example, that every home did have Narcan in it. We would save lives, number one. But number two, would I know how to apply the Narcan to, say, Sherwin if he was overdosing? Would I be able to do that, or would I need some training?
So there's a little bit of training we do, but it's very, very straightforward. Then the prescription brand Narcan that is most commonly distributed right now is a nasal spray. So it doesn't require any needles. It doesn't require you to draw up anything. You simply spray it in someone's nose, like you would Flonase.
It's not like the Pulp Fiction part where the girl is overdosing and the needle has to go right in the heart and just slam it. It's not like that anymore, huh?
That was very unrealistic, and that was not Narcan. Oh no! Yeah, that was I think epinephrine, which is totally different. But that was very, very unrealistic. But, I mean, the realistic part was that that was actually interesting because she thought she was snorting cocaine and she was snorting heroin, and right. That's why she overdosed. But, no, we don't stick big needles in people's chests. But the nice thing about the nasal Narcan is that it's very easy to use. There's no needles involved. You just spray it in somebody's nose. And the main training is just involving you know, making sure, you know, call 911, you know, put the person on their side in case they vomit, and also making sure that people understand that there are laws protecting you and the person who's overdosed. If you call 911 to get assistance, you cannot, they cannot charge you criminally based on the circumstances that you're in when you help that person. So it's kind of like a Good Samaritan law or that type of thing. Sometimes people are worried about calling 911 because they're worried about getting into legal trouble.
Right.
But there are protections in place when someone overdoses if you call 911, because they don't want, we don't want there to be a barrier to give, you know, to having people call for that care because they're afraid that they might get arrested.
Well, I can tell you one thing. When I'm done here, I'm putting off a letter to Quentin Tarantino. That's all there is to it.
So another thing good idea to talk about is the street drugs. You have to be really careful when you're purchasing drugs off the street because you don't know exactly what you're getting. So it's really dangerous. There's a lot of, you think you're getting one thing like methamphetamines, and, you know, and next thing you know, there's fentanyl with the methamphetamines, and you're overdosing. So you got to be really careful, you know.
And that's the thing that is the big thing now is a lot of fentanyl is getting out there and it's being mixed in with other drugs that people mm-hmm. normally take, and all of a sudden there's fentanyl and their body's not ready for that.
Right, and just like for instance, like you're making you got fentanyl and you're making it up and you're making it into a pill, okay, for instance. You're taking that and you're mixing it up and you're grinding it through and you're grinding it and there's the pill, right? And it's just coming out, pills everywhere. So now it's made, you're selling them on the street. When the person purchases it, they think that there's just this pill and they think that it's okay, but actually there's each pill, you don't know how much fentanyl's in each of the pills because they're mixed up, and that's another problem too. So you got to be really careful when you're purchasing drugs on the street. So
I would like to add, I'm glad that you brought up fentanyl, Sherwin, because I'd like to add that they've looked at in like King County and Snohomish and some of the counties in Washington, and they've looked at the supply of, and what they are is they're these blue, they look just like oxycodone 30 milligram blue pills, and so they're passing them off as oxys, and a lot of people, some people know that they're fentanyl, but when they looked at the supply that's out on the street, 100% of the blue pills that said they were, that were made to look like oxy, were fentanyl. The only oxycodone they found that was actually oxycodone had a prescription attached to it. So like somebody that was, you know, had a prescription and then they just gave some to someone or sold them. But everything that was sourced on the street was fentanyl. And I take care of people all the time who, they've never even heard of fentanyl. They don't know that that's what they're using. And it can have devastating consequences. It's a very, very strong drug. It is, like Sherwin pointed out, very inconsistent in terms of the amount that's in the pill. It's also showing up in the heroin supply. And as he pointed out, it's showing up in the methamphetamine supply. So you have people who may not even be opioid users. They only use methamphetamine, which, so what we call them, the opioid naive. So they have a very low tolerance. They use methamphetamine. It has fentanyl in it. And then they're at a very high risk of overdose. And we've seen that in the last few years. It was moving from the East Coast over and through the Midwest. And in the past few years, the data on overdoses in Washington, by far the highest levels of overdoses are attributed to fentanyl. Overdoses related to heroin and oxycodone and other things have gone down, and fentanyl has been responsible for almost for the majority of the deaths from overdose in the last few years in Washington State. So we definitely have a new player that is influencing the care that we can provide, and also making it even more urgent that we provide some of these outreach and preventive services. Because, like I said before, you don't get a second chance if you're dead. And so, you know, the number one goal that we have is educating people on how to stay alive and how to minimize their risks until they get to that point, because not everybody is on the same, you know, they're not on the same trajectory, and not everybody's ready yet to get treatment. But if we can keep them safe until that point, then we owe it to our community to do that.
We've had an increase of overdose in Grace Harbor last month, and I'm part of the overdose recovery team. And what we do is that we're teamed up with the fire department, and we go and we visit people who overdose and try to get them the help that they need.
Okay, so there is a program out there to help that. And I do know that right here in Grays Harbor, there was some problem. I remember a news release from the Hoquiam Police Department talking about some fentanyl that had gotten out, but they were saying that it was something else. And a 15-year-old boy overdosed and almost died. I guess they brought him back, but it took a couple of doses of the
Narcan.
Yeah, Narcan.
Yes.
Took a couple of doses of Narcan to get him out. But a lot of people, in regards to this fentanyl, you don't even know you're taking fentanyl.
No. I've had a couple of clients that come right to mind in the last week to two that have come in for an assessment for substance use, and they said, oh, my urine's going to test positive for methamphetamine. And I say, is that it? And yep, that's all you're going to find in there. And I say, so I'm not going to find any fentanyl? Oh, no. And so when I test their urine and there goes the fentanyl and it tests positive for fentanyl and I show it to them, they go, no, that's got to be wrong. And I say, well, your methamphetamine had fentanyl in it. And they said, no, I trust my dealer.
Mm-hmm.
I'm like, okay.
You can't trust a dealer.
You can't trust your dealer.
I'm a product of the 60s. You can't trust your dealer. You know?
So what they asked me then, how did I get my fentanyl and my methamphetamine? It's not something you can visually see. And Dr. C could probably support that in the fact that it's such a small amount because it's coming not from where we suspect it to be, like from Mexico. The stuff that we're seeing now, the fentanyl that we're seeing now, is coming from Asia. So it's a much more stronger and more potent brand of fentanyl. And so it takes just a very small amount to overdose on.
Yes, that's true. And we, I've lost my train of thought, sorry. We're definitely, what I was going to say is you're referring to the 15-year-old boy. Fentanyl does often require multiple doses of Narcan for if you overdose in terms of, to reverse it because it is so potent. So even sort of the traditional idea that, you give a dose of Narcan and somebody, you know, they start breathing again, they, you know, wake up. We're not seeing that with fentanyl. And there's a lot of misinformation out there about fentanyl, and even among healthcare providers. I mean, I get asked, you know, all the time, the EMTs, if you touch someone who's been using fentanyl, can you absorb it from their skin and things like that, which is not true. But there is a lot of misinformation, and I'm hoping that as we, you know, as we have more data and we can provide more education to the public, that we will be able to address this crisis. And there is a King County has some really good educational material on their website, kingcounty.gov, about you know, overdoses, and also educational materials about fentanyl. So that's a really good resource for people. I also wanted to just plug a website called the Washington Recovery Helpline, because they have a medication treatment locator for the state of Washington. And so basically you can put in like where you live and it'll tell you where in the area provides treatment services. I mean, I know not everybody has web access, but, you know, sometimes it's hard when you do, you know, internet searches to be able to find, you know, like how do you look for the right kind of treatment? Because there are a lot of residential treatment programs out there, but that might not be necessarily what someone's looking for. And not all residential treatment services or programs offer medication. So this is a specific, the Washington Recovery Helpline, this is a specific locator for places that provide, like Lifeline, that provide medication-assisted treatment for opioid use disorder. So you know if you're contacting that place that that's the treatment that you're getting.
Join us next Monday morning at 8:40 a.m. for our continuing discussion on substance use disorder as a treatable disease, brought to you by the Grays Harbor Consortium, exclusively on 103.5 FM and 1450 a.m. KBKW. To hear archived discussions, log on to gograysharbor.com.